just eat sound, so.
These microphones don't produce it.
No. So, it's voice box.
Hello. Okay. I'm happy to be here, Chair Horn and members of the board and the public. Together with members of the Antelope Valley Regional Water Management Group, we'll be presenting to you the Salt Nutrient Management Plan for the Antelope Valley Groundwater Basin. So I just want to give you an overview of the discussion today. So I'm just going to give the introduction, and really the heavy lifting is going to be by some folks behind me. So the final Antelope Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan presentation will be by Erica Bench. She's with the Sanitation Districts of Los Angeles County. She's here representing the IRWIMP group. And then when Erica's done, I'll come up and give you sort of the benefits of the plan and how staff can use it, how we can utilize it to protect water quality in the Antelope Valley. And then that will be followed by a list of staff recommendations regarding the Antelope Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan, and then just in general. And then hopefully that will spark questions and discussion. So, how did we get here? Well, I wanted to put this timeline up here to just sort of give the background of how we got to where we are today. So in February 2009, the recycled water policy was adopted by the State Water Board, and that required that every groundwater basin in the state have a salt nutrient management plan completed by May 14, 2014. Within a year of the plan's completion, the regional boards were to consider incorporating or adopting portions of those plans into their basin plan. And then in January 2013, the recycled water policy was amended to include specific monitoring requirements for constituents of emerging concern. So down here, the Antelope Valley Group, they wasted no time, and they started developing their scope of work, and in October 2011, they came before the board and shared the scope and content of what their plan was going to look like. With your concurrence, they started gathering data, and in July 2013, they submitted to Water Board staff a preliminary draft plan for our review. Staff commented on that preliminary draft, stakeholders commented on that draft, and they moved forward and started preparing a final draft plan. They submitted that final draft plan to staff on May 14, 2014. We had some minor comments on that plan, but we had made the determination that it met the minimum requirements of the recycled water policy for salt nutrient management plans, and that it was consistent with our basin plan. So on August 21st, they incorporated our comments and submitted their final plan to staff. So that brings us here today, November 12th, 2014, presenting to you the findings and a summary of their salt nutrient management plan, and then beginning plan implementation. We expect, in accordance with their plan, triannual reports, with the first report submitted to us for review in 2018. So that's my quick spiel. I'd like to sorry, Erica, I spelled her name wrong. I'd like to invite Erica up, but I did want to say that working with the Antelope Valley Stakeholder Group, it was great. Their collaboration was awesome. They worked together well. They pooled their resources. They were able to get us the plan. They took all of our comments into consideration and incorporated them as necessary, and it was really a good process, I think. It really worked out well. So with that, I will introduce Erica Bench.
Hey, good afternoon. Erica Bench with LA County Sanitation Districts. And I'm here to represent the Antelope Valley stakeholders group for the salt and nutrient management plan. Okay. So the Antelope Valley, or AV, is an arid area that is susceptible to imported water curtailments and drought and climate change. It has a limited water supply. And we believe that recycled water can be a solution. And this has been identified by the recycled water policy and the IRWIMP and urban water management plans for the region. I'm here today to show you that the AV Salt and Nutrient Management Plan, SNMP, meets the requirements of the recycled water policy, and it is a stakeholder-driven plan ready for regional board approval. We show in the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan that the basin has pretty good water quality. There are a few concerns with naturally occurring constituents such as arsenic, but overall good water quality. And then we looked at the current and future water-related projects in the 25-year planning period. Our year zero was 2010, since we started back then. It's already been a few years. But we looked at 25 years because this matches the IRWIMP planning period and also exceeds the recycled water planning period of 10 years, suggestion of 10 years. And we show that these projects, if implemented, do not unreasonably degrade the water quality or cause pollution, and that beneficial uses of the groundwater will be protected. The Salt and Nutrient Management Plan also provides for a monitoring plan and other approaches so that we can demonstrate that effective management of the salts and nutrients are maintained for the basin. Here was a timeline that Jan already gave, so I'll just kind of skip through this. Pretty much everything there is that she mentioned. So the details of the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. First, we have the stakeholders who are members of the IRWIMP group for the AV. And they included water and wastewater agencies and the cities, Rosemont, Palmdale, and Lancaster, and also other small community participants. And we also had the regional board staff who graciously provided feedback and regulatory guidance. We disseminated our information through the AV IRWIMP website. We provided agendas and meeting minutes and other materials such as the drafts of the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. And then we also provided notifications through an email listserv. We had over 20 meetings since the kickoff meeting in August 2009, and eventually the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan was adopted as an appendix to the 2013 update of the IRWIMP formally by the IRWIMP stakeholders and their boards. I really like that you can identify the Antelope Valley easily in most satellite imagery. It's this little triangle, or rather large triangle, confined by the Tehachapi Mountains and the San Gabriel Mountains. And you can see, maybe not in this, but there's a little bit of ag going on, and you can easily see the dry lake beds. There's a little bit of washes surface water that can be seen. As you may know, this is a closed basin, not much water input. Precipitation is really critical, and then also imported water. So to understand the basin, we had to characterize it. We looked at the basin boundaries and sub-basin boundaries, which pretty much matched the IRWIMP identified boundaries and also identified by Department of Water Resources and the USGS boundaries. We looked at the hydrogeology and land use, as well as cleanup sites. For cleanup sites, we looked at the GeoTracker database, and most of the open cleanup sites were related to diesel and gas issues and not really anything with salts and nutrients, although we know that there is a couple of sites that relate to nitrates. We also looked at the beneficial uses identified in the Lahontan Basin Plan, and we identified which constituents we would study further and the associated water quality. Here's just the look at the surface of the basin. Here's the two major faults, San Andreas and Garlock, and that match the mountain ranges. The LA Aqueduct flows through, and then the California Aqueduct, or State Water Project, supplies some of the water to the Antelope Valley. And then there's three major ephemeral streams, the Amargosa Creek, Little Rock Creek, and Big Rock Creek. And then there's the Little Rock Creek Dam, which holds the only surface water use in the basin for supply. And then, can't really see in this slide, but here are the dry lake beds. So water from the mountains, precipitation from the mountains generally flows northward or eastward towards the dry lake beds. And there's not really that much infiltration in the valley floor. Here are the basin boundaries, which I mentioned before, match USGS and DWR sub-basin boundaries. And most of what we are concerned, or that we found data for, were these four southern basins, the Lancaster, Pearland, and Buttes basin, sub-basins, and the Nenok Basin. And these northern basins, there was not much data, and as I'll mention later, the projects that we identified are located only in the southern basins. If we were to cut the basin from point A to A prime right here along this line, we would get this cross section. And you can see there are three major or primary aquifers. There's the upper aquifer, which is also called the principal aquifer, which is where most of the groundwater is drawn for supply. There's a lacustrine clay layer that comes up and almost confines the upper aquifer and comes up at the dry lake beds at the surface, to the surface of the dry lake beds. And then you have the middle and lower aquifers, which are older and tend to have higher constituent concentrations. Then we identified which salts and nutrients and other constituents of concern we would look into further. Total dissolved solids, which is a measure of salinity, and chloride are closely related to recycled water. In terms of nutrients, we looked at nitrates primarily because it's found in the groundwater, versus potassium and phosphorus and other nitrogen species are not really found in the groundwater. They're either taken up by vegetation, naturally attenuated in the soil, or volatilized. Then we also look at arsenic, fluoride, and boron, which are known to have high concentrations in parts of the AB groundwater basin, and then also chromium, which is, of course, a concern with the Lahontan region and the Antelope Valley. We then identified what our water quality management goals would be, and we based these on the designated beneficial uses of the basin in the basin plan. And primarily, we're looking at municipal and agricultural supply. Also designated are the industrial service supply, but that is not really water quality dependent. And also, freshwater replenishment is not utilized in the basin. So we have municipal supply. We listed the drinking water standards that are associated with that. to protect human health. And then for agricultural supply, we looked up in the state's searchable database, and which draws information from a United Nations report, and then we compare that to actual crops grown in the basin from pesticide reports. So here are the objectives that are associated with each constituent and each beneficial use. And then we came up with our salt and nutrient management plan, water quality management goals. So what is the goal of the plan? And here, for some of the constituents, you can see there's several levels, and we took the tiered approach that was suggested by the regional board staff, that if a sub-basin exceeds a lower water quality management goal, then we will proceed to the next higher goal, if appropriate. We found that the existing water quality in the Antelope Valley groundwater basin is pretty good. It's especially in the principal aquifer, which supplies most of the whatever groundwater is extracted. There's poor water quality in the northern regions, where the water tends to be higher, or where the water tends to be older, and just has more concentration. And we found that it's suitable for domestic agriculture and industrial uses. So for our groundwater quality data, at first we ran into a problem because public well or private well owners did not want to share their data because of privacy concerns. So we decided to go and only use data that was publicly accessible. So we drew from the groundwater ambient monitoring and assessment, or GAMMA, program, and then also the USGS National Water Database. Here's an example of the total dissolved solids. The average, each dot represents a well, or maybe even wells on top of each other, or near each other, very close to each other. But as you can see, most of the well data is in the Lancaster subbasin, which is the most used, and some in the Pearland and Buttes, and not as much in the northern region. Then we took the average for each subbasin, the water quality, and applied a gradient, color gradient, blue being the lower water quality, concentrations, and then yellow and red being the higher concentrations. So for total dissolved solids, you can see it's mostly blue, a little bit concern in the northern regions. And then we determined a similar capacity for each of the constituents based on the management goals that we identified earlier. And you can see in relationship to what the water quality is for each subbasin. So for example, North Muroc, which is a northern basin, it exceeds the agricultural and municipal water quality management goals, but does not exceed the upper drinking water management goal. So in that case, maybe crops, the farmer would select a crop that is more salt tolerant. And then really this is 100% of your assimilative capacity for each constituent based on each subbasin. So assimilative capacity is the current water or the background water quality minus the objective in this case. So for Antelope Valley, we did an overall groundwater basin average, and it's about 100 milligrams per liter was the assimilative capacity. We did similar for exercise for chloride. Again, lower concentrations in the south, a little bit higher in the north, and pretty good assimilative capacity, ample. Same thing for nitrate, and again, ample assimilative capacity. The ones that are not, the basins that are not shown have no water quality that we could find. And then also for nitrate, we do know that there are some localized issues in the Antelope Valley, but we're taking the average, so they're kind of averaged out. So, you know, future iterations would probably look at localized events. Arsenic, as I mentioned, it's naturally occurring, especially in the northern basins, and so we have higher concentrations here. And, of course, you can see some exceedances. And then for the overall groundwater basin, it's just below the 10 micrograms per liter objective. Fluoride, similar. Boron, very similar. And some exceedance again. But we know that usually if there's any agricultural activities going in those sub-basins, that they select for boron-tolerant or salt-tolerant crops. Chromium, same thing. And we looked at total chromium for the hexavalent chromium. We didn't have that much data. We had some data in the Lancaster sub-basin, and on average, they were lower than the newly adopted 10 micrograms per liter for hexavalent chromium. But we didn't have as much data for that. So next, we looked at our aquifer loading and unloading. Here is a conceptual model. What are the inputs into the basin and what are the outputs? Generally, we categorize two uses, M&I, municipal and industrial uses, versus agricultural use, and they both have return flows associated with that. In municipal and industrial use, generally has indoor use and outdoor use, irrigation, outside. Indoor, the water either goes to a septic system or probably to the sewered system where it can be converted to recycled water, and then that would have return flows depending on the use. Aquifer recharge projects put water into the ground, and then we have precipitation onto the valley floor and runoff from the mountains also providing inputs. And the only major or significant output is groundwater extraction, pumping. There's not really much interaction between other basins, not anything significant, at least. Then we provided a mass balance conceptual model, and you can't really see all the connects to this, but the important thing is that we basically have our different sources of water, state water, project water, or imported water, precipitation becoming surface flow, and they can be then used for groundwater recharge, agricultural use, or M&I uses. And then we have extracted water going to agricultural use and M&I uses. And M&I uses then can be used indoors or outdoors. Indoors, it's either sewered or septic. And then sewered turns into recycled water. And then that's, again, can be used, and there's associated return flows. We also included evaporation ponds and environmental management use of recycled water, and that can also contribute to return flows. We identified about 19 projects that could potentially have an impact on salts and nutrients in the Antelope Valley Basin. And I won't go into details, but most of them are categorized into either wastewater treatment or recycled water use or groundwater recharge. And you can see most of them are, or actually all of them are, in the lower four basins, sub-basins. And so that's where we focused. We had enough data, and we focused our monitoring plan. We identified the water quality of the source waters, the supply that's used in the Antelope Valley. We have state water project water, which has generally good water quality. Recycled water, which tends to have higher concentrations of some of the constituents. And then we have stormwater, which we use the Little Rock Reservoir monitoring there because there wasn't as much stormwater information. But that, too, is generally excellent, very excellent water. Low concentrations. We then did a preliminary screening analysis because we wanted to see which constituents needed extensive modeling. And we did a very conservative assumption that all the contracted water over 25 years was used, along with any water that could be safely pumped. We assumed it all went into the basin and that it had a water quality conservatively at the recycled water quality, because it tended to be the highest water quality versus stormwater or state water project water. And we just pretend like all those salts came into the basin and stayed in the basin. Which constituents would we be concerned with? And as you can see here, TDS and arsenic could potentially use greater than 20% of the assimilative capacity. And we picked 20% because that's what the recycled water policy suggests to use. We then went on to our model. We used assumptions from the adjudication summary expert report. I guess I should note that the Antelope Valley groundwater basin is still undergoing an adjudication process, and that provided some challenges to this process. But we thought that we would use the report that came out of that process, so that there would be hopefully less disputes over. So we made some assumptions based on imported water flows and the percentage of use by ag and M&I. M&I use, as I mentioned before, is either used indoors, outdoors, or consumptively used. Anything that was used indoor is either sewered or unsewered, and there's flows associated with these. We made assumptions on natural recharge, return flows from each use, ag and M&I. And we assumed that the pumped groundwater was equal to the sustainable yield for each year. So what could be safely pumped without issues. And then we made assumptions on aquifer volume and the percentage of land use. We then made some water quality assumptions, which were based on the source water quality that I showed you before. And for arsenic, because sometimes it was undetected, we use half of the detection limit for a conservative assumption. And we did this on a overall basin wide rather than sub-basin, because there's other information that we did not have. And then we looked at the for the increase in domestic use, we looked at the potable supply water quality versus the influent going into the wastewater treatment systems, and then saw what the increase was from there, and they matched textbook numbers. Then we tested in our model six scenarios, the first being the base case, assuming that all projects are, whatever existing projects are in place, and that no new implemented projects would take place. Scenario two, we implemented all the future, we assumed that all the future projects would be implemented that we identified earlier. Scenario three, we looked at just the recycled water projects by themselves without the groundwater recharge projects. Scenario four and five, we looked at a fraction of the groundwater recharge projects, because groundwater recharge projects take a long time to get off the ground. Sometimes they don't go past the feasibility study, and we didn't want to prioritize one project versus another, so we just did an overall assumption on percentage, that percentage of the flow would be used. And then we did a sixth scenario where it was extreme drought, where we assumed decreases in natural recharge, assumed no groundwater recharge projects would be implemented, and that groundwater pumping would be at a greater rate than the sustainable yield. So then what would be sustainable? And that was over the course of the 25 years versus the other cases, they take an average of wet and dry years. So then through our model, we were able to come up with a projection for the 25-year projection to 2035, and then also we did a linear regression to 100 years, which is 2110. And then we looked at how many years it would take for the groundwater basin overall to reach the salt and nutrient management goals that we had established. And for TDS, you can see most of them are over 100 years, so that's ample time to plan if we needed to, if we saw a critical situation. And then for arsenic, it's a much quicker process, and the lowest being extreme drought, be 47 years. And as I mentioned before, this is a naturally occurring constituent, so it's kind of expected that it would be increase, and then many of our inputs are very conservative, so this may even be a conservative assumption. Here, you can't see it that well, but there's the graphical representation of the model outputs, and you can see here is the gradual increase in TDS over the 100 years, and here's the 450 line, which was the lowest water quality management goal for TDS. And so you can see even in 100 years it won't reach that. And then here's arsenic, which really gradually gets closer and closer to the 10 micrograms per liter. And we, you know, there's been some implementation measures to address that. Here we're looking at the assimilated capacity usage. As I mentioned before, 20% was kind of our criteria. So we looked at 10 years, which was suggested in the recycled water policy, and then also the 25 years. For the most part, for TDS, that's pretty good. There is a little bit, 1% over for recycled water use in 25 years, but we think that recycled water is a valuable and reliable resource. So that matches the maximum benefit of the people. And then arsenic, no real issues in 10 years, maybe a little bit in the drought, and then also in 25 years there's a little bit of concern. But as I mentioned before, it's a naturally occurring constituent, and there are some implementations of measures underway to treat that. With the model, we performed our anti-degradation analysis. We showed that the water quality is generally good and that with implementation of these projects, we don't expect any unreasonable degradation of the groundwater quality or any pollution, and that the beneficial uses will remain protected. And we feel that recycled water as well as groundwater recharge projects are vitally important for this region, especially considering that imported water shortages and climate change or extended drought are occurring. Also, recycled water, if all the recycled water were used in the Antelope Valley that were available today, they would supply about 20,000 or offset enough potable supply for 20,000 homes in the AV, and also would offset the greenhouse gases that are associated with the energies to move the imported water to this region. In the salt nutrient management plan, we provide a monitoring plan. We chose our monitoring locations based on where the projects are located. And then also we may extend that because we're drawing from the Gamma and USGS databases, which will have additional wells. Monitoring frequency for the most part is annual or triannual for these wells depending on constituent. And then imported water and recycled water are monitored more frequently than annually. We will monitor the same constituents that we identified earlier beyond the TDS and arsenic, and then also we'll provide data evaluation and reporting every 3 years, as Jan mentioned. In the data evaluation, we hope to determine what the current ambient conditions of the groundwater are at that time, so we'll base it on the last 5 years of monitoring data. We'll compare those results to the baseline and to the water quality management goals that we identified, and then to the model predictions. We'll update the future and current projects list because they're changing all the time. And then we could potentially update and calibrate the model that we used. And we will discuss the adequacy of the salt and nutrient management plan at that time. And as the models show, that we don't foresee any unreasonable degradation of the groundwater quality or pollution. So we are not suggesting any new measures be implemented to manage salts and nutrients in the groundwater, and nor do we recommend a basin plan amendment. But there are some measures that are already in use in the basin that are helping to manage these salts and nutrients. For example, municipal wastewater management, point source control, they have a pretreatment program, and public and customer outreach. And as well, some of the plants have undergone plant upgrades that have resulted in better water quality. Recycled water is not to be used at rates above the agronomic rates or more water than the plants and crops can take, so that there's limited amounts of percolation to the groundwater. Groundwater management has been proposed by the IRWIMP group, and also the adjudication is underway, which should better provide processes for that. On-site water treatment system, the state board has adopted a policy for that for continued septic systems, but they're also aimed to protect the groundwater quality. And then agricultural measures include drip irrigation and then soil analysis, plant analysis, so that they can better focus their fertilizer applications and water applications. And then additional measures may be could be added if we find later down the road that some salts and nutrients are impacting the basin, such as more advanced treatment at the wastewater side, or better or more stormwater capture. Stormwater tended to have really excellent water quality and could help to dilute those constituents in the basin. So to sum up, the salt nutrient management plan addresses the regional salt and nutrient loading into the basin and provides for management. It demonstrates the use of recycled water and other water projects will not unreasonably degrade the water quality or cause pollution, so that the groundwater quality is protected and the beneficial uses remain intact. We're hoping with the adoption of this plan that increased partnering opportunities, that it will increase partnering opportunities and allow us for better project funding for developing recycled water and other water projects. For example, with the IRWIN process, and I understand that Prop 1 can also be another opportunity. And I think that the Antelope Valley, they just got an awarded $1.66 million for an arsenic treatment process. And that concludes my presentation, and I'd like to thank the stakeholders and the regional board staff for providing excellent regulatory guidance. Any questions?
Thank you.
Sorry.
That end about Pete? Yes, I do. Thank you.
Excellent presentation, Eric.
Oh, thank you.
Very thorough. I made some notes as you went through the slides, so I'll refer back to them for my questions.
Okay.
At the bottom of page 14, and maybe that means slide 28, I've got a question.
That's quite bad.
Title is Water Quality Balance, Aquifer Loading and Limiting.
The lollipop one. That one.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yes.
Regarding aquifer recharge projects, I'm having a little trouble understanding how an aquifer recharge project bringing in water with relatively low arsenic concentrations into a basin with much higher arsenic concentrations can consume some of the assimilative capacity of the basin for arsenic.
A lot of our model inputs assume that the water coming in had a concentration of half the detection limit, so we're actually applying a little bit, and over time, although it doesn't reach 10, it gets closer and closer. So it's a conservative assumption. We couldn't just do zero. We decided not to go zero, but you know that could have been another process we could have taken. And then also, because arsenic tends to be contained in the soils and the rocks, as you're putting water down, it could actually loosen up some of that arsenic, or also could the rocks and soils could take up, naturally attenuate some of that arsenic.
Well, intuitively, it would seem as though we are diluting the arsenic concentration in the water. So I'll have to give that some more thought. You have a slide titled Model Scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that the model is refined enough at this stage to take any regulatory action based upon it, or does it need considerable work?
I don't think it's refined enough for regulatory action, and there is room for improvement, and you can make adjustments to it. We considered that all the mass of salts related to each use would be going into the groundwater basins, where in reality, often you have plant uptake or natural attenuation or volatilization or some other way that it's not actually reaching the groundwater. So the model itself is a very conservative approach to predicting the water quality.
Okay, my next question is on the slide titled Anti-Degradation Analysis. Evidently, the analysis that this plan has conducted came to the conclusions you're showing us here. And then it appears that the current projects and proposed projects won't have detrimental impacts to the basin. Would that include the Antelope Valley Water Bank project?
Yes, we included the water bank projects back here. I think it's one of these right here.
Number two.
We included the flows from the state water project water that would be used there, and then we assumed 10%, I think, of... We assumed that 90% of the water would be pumped out and used, and then 10% retained, right? Yeah. So, yes, it is included in the... And I must note that we did a programmatic anti-deg. We didn't do a project-specific anti-deg, so it is understandable, especially for groundwater recharge projects, that you would require a project-specific anti-deg degradation analysis, according to the groundwater recharge requirements.
Okay, thank you. No more questions.
Mr. Sandell?
I have some questions, but let me hear from the other local person first.
Okay. An excellent presentation. Thank you for that. And I will save my questions for staff.
Okay. All right. I didn't want to shortchange anybody. It's probably in the bulk of the report, but it wasn't clear to me in your presentation that in the scenario number six for extreme drought, that you assume that there's going to be less imported water. That is true.
We didn't decrease, because of the way that the model is set up, we couldn't decrease the imported water, but we increased the water that's going to recharge projects in that there was none. None of that water was being used for recharge projects. But the same was used for municipal and industrial and agricultural supply as previous. And then we decreased the amount of natural recharge and said that the there would be an increase in groundwater pumped.
Okay, but you have the model is a live spreadsheet, which
yes.
you can modify.
Which we can modify.
So
exactly.
If it's popular, then people can be working on it and refining it.
Right, exactly.
Did you anticipate that there were going to be enforcement of irrigation practices somehow coming out of all of this?
We thought that maybe there might be suggested best management practices to the agricultural community for the recycled water use. There is already requirements in that we have to closely monitor the amount of water that's applied, and same thing for outdoor use. For the ag community, we didn't want to be too pushy, and we didn't have as much involvement of that community as we would have liked. We had a little bit, but not that much. So we didn't think that there would be full-on enforcement requirements.
So best irrigation practices, you would think that the ag community would follow those naturally because they don't want to use more water than they have to.
Exactly. More water or more fertilizer than they need to. They're, in a cost analysis budget, so they don't want to use more than they need to.
Well, this you guys have done a really great amount of work on this, and I don't think I read every single page of what was sent to us by staff. I read most of it.
Oh, thank you.
And the one thing, I mean, it's really good work. But the one thing that just kept stopping me, though, as I was reading through, was that every time I read the word goal, I had to change goal to limit or NCL or something, because a goal is something you want to get to. In this case, a goal is something we don't want to get to.
Right, yeah.
That you might want to change that word
right.
to something else like limit or something, because at least for me, it just kept bringing me up short.
And we had problems with that terminology. We didn't want to say objective because we didn't feel like this was a regulatory requirement.
No.
Yeah, but we feel like that's the goal. We want to stay under that goal. And actually, we want to stay.
Don't want to reach.
We don't want to reach. Yeah.
Limit is perhaps better.
Limit. Okay.
Thank you. It's a nice job.
Well, I concur with what Mr. Sandell said. And I have to confess that I did not read every page.
Oh, that's okay.
So I have some questions, which might have been answered had I read every page. But explain to me going forward what happens. There's talk of refining the model and updating data. Are there dates? Are there, is there any sort of requirement for to do another round by such a date or something like that?
Well, we figure for the next report we'll have additional data and we can see how that is in relationship to what those results are in relationship to what we've just discussed and what we saw with the model predictions. Is everything going as according to what we predict? Is it better, worse? And then also the groundwater is undergoing an adjudication. So we were kind of hoping that maybe there will be a water master that would take over those duties and be very involved in what the water quality would be. Yeah.
Okay.
And refined, they probably would come up with better refined models than we did.
Right. Do you have an opportunity to do a sensitivity analysis on the model and figure out which variables or assumptions you made might make the most difference in your outputs?
Yes, I did do that, or we did that. We adjusted the concentrations of the source water quality and that saw that they didn't really have that much. I think we increased it by like 25%, I think, to see if that would, have increase the timeline, but it didn't that much. And I think we played with the imported water supplies volume, and then I think all the inputs, natural recharge, how much was it naturally recharged, and I think with the M&I and ag use proportions we played with. And I believe it was actually the imported water that had the most significant results. But it was really, it wasn't that much, even with given all that. I think it was only increased, I remember TDS, at least it was under 10 over the 25-year planning period.
Did you have a chance to, or did the model take into consideration sort of more dynamic things that you may not have so much control over, such as conversion of land from agricultural to municipal and industrial use, how that might affect?
I believe in the sensitivity analysis, we played with that a little bit just to see if there was changes. But we followed mostly the adjudication summary expert report, and they had, throughout the planning period, kept the same percentages, proportion of ag and municipal. And I don't, do you remember why? I think it was like 51-49 or something like that. But I don't remember why they kept it the same. But we assumed, we know that that the water supply should stay the same, irregardless of where it's being used. And
I did say that those percentages were going to remain stable.
We can't hear you, and you also need to come up and identify yourself
for the record.
Hi, my name is Timothy Chen from Los Angeles County Waterworks Districts. So the actual percentages that Erica was talking about, they're going to remain stable within the planning period. That's what the report was saying.
I find that kind of surprising, given how close the area is to Los Angeles, and also we had some very large developments that were being proposed here before the economy crashed. I mean, covering 300 acres, several of them that were very large that haven't happened yet, and I suspect will come online.
A lot of that has to do with the availability of water, potable water. There isn't water available to supply those developments, so a lot of those have stalled.
And then the other question was about climate change. I saw a presentation by Alex Hall, was at UCLA. He did a very fine-grained, I think it was a 9-meter square projection of the impacts of climate change for the LA area. But, he drew a square, and a quarter of the square caught Antelope Valley. And the temperature increase in Antelope Valley is going to be significantly higher than in the LA Basin. I can't remember what the numbers were offhand, but it was like that area was red. It was like, oh. And so, that seems, there are going to be a lot of dynamic changes from climate change, including, so temperature goes up, that means evapotranspiration goes up, that means probably groundwater pumping goes up, that means, were you able to take any of those kind of factors into consideration?
I guess with our drought scenario, we assumed that there would be additional pumping above the safe yield, what was required by the safe yield, and that the natural recharge, so in other words, it wouldn't be time for the precipitation to infiltrate into the groundwater. There's less snowpack, so we reduced the volume of natural recharge. There just won't be as much. I think there are already high temperatures, and there just won't be as much water available in that area.
Okay. Thank you. So, that's it for questions. Oh, they already said no. So, Jan. Thank you very much. That's a lot of work.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you. Thank you, Erica.
Tim.
So I wanted to, and we've discussed a little bit of this already, but I wanted to put this slide up to sort of, well, first of all, did you want to take a break? I don't know. It was kind of a long.
Let's push through this. And,
got it. Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to go through some of the pros and cons of the Antelope Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan. And I think that there's a lot of data out there, and this is the first time that it's actually pooled all of the data together. And so we have a very good idea of what the water quality is in 9 of the 12 sub-basins. There's actually 12. 3 of them don't have any water quality data at the moment. But for the 9 that we do, we see that there is a relatively significant spatial variability of that water quality. And that's good information because we've identified the data gaps. There's 3 basins where we actually need more data or data at all. It will help inform decisions for future projects if they're in specific sub-basins where there might be less assimilative capacity than others. And then for proponents of new projects, I think we should consider requiring them or requesting that they contribute to the salt nutrient management plan and implementation of that plan, you know, work with the stakeholder group to help improve the efforts. Some of the issues that we see are that the plan is limited, but it's a really good first step. You know, we have to start somewhere, and this is where we're starting. The groundwater data, as Erica showed, is skewed more towards the populated areas. There's a lot of unpopulated portions of Antelope Valley. The baseline water quality data, we don't know the well construction details for all of those wells, but the group is actively trying to figure all of that out. And the model is limited. Maybe you might not have gotten it, but the model averages across the entire basin. But we have baseline data for the individual little sub-basins. So I think over time, with model refinement, being able to model loading on the sub-basin level is going to be just fantastic. So I wanted to look again at aquifer recharge projects. This particular one, let me get my notes so I don't forget what I was going to say. So we don't have a formal board resolution, but historically we haven't regulated aquifer recharge projects. I don't know why. It was before my time. But it's the general understanding that the water quantity benefit far outweighs the potential for water quality degradation. So this particular project, the Antelope Valley Banking Project, is here in the Nenok Basin. And at total build-out, there's about 1,500 acres, and right now there's about 320 acres that have been constructed, and they're currently recharging State Water Project. So once the 1,500 acres is developed, they'll have a capacity of about 100,000 acre-feet per year of recharge and recovery. From the plan, State Water Project, under their model assumptions, has 3.8 micrograms per liter arsenic contributing concentration as the source water. The Nenok Basin currently has a baseline water quality of 13.24 micrograms per liter arsenic. And there's no assimilative capacity for arsenic with respect to the municipal beneficial use. So the question, is it dilution or loading
So you might assume, like Keith, like you were asking, you have a bucket of 13.24 milligrams per liter arsenic, and you're dumping in 3.8 milligrams per liter arsenic. You're going to dilute it, right? But what if, like in the, for the Nenagh Basin, you have naturally occurring arsenic. It's in the soil, it's in the bedrock, you're recharging water, you're leaching or flushing arsenic from the soil, and now you're loading to the Nenagh Basin, where there's no assimilative capacity. Well, bottom line, we can't answer this question because we don't know. I think what we need to request from the Antelope Valley Water Banking Project proponent is a project-specific anti-degradation analysis so we can address those questions. You know, is it diluting or is it loading? So we know. That was one of the questions that came out of the plan. So now we're just going to jump right in. You've heard from Erica about the details of the plan. I've shared with you some examples of how we can use the plan. And this is the list of staff recommendations. We recommend that the Water Board accept the Antelope Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan, the No Basin Plan Amendment required at this time. The plan contains the required elements of the recycled water policy. It was prepared with stakeholder input. It adequately defines the baseline water quality where data is available. And the modeling predicts that assimilative capacity will be maintained throughout the 25-year planning period, and no changes to water quality objectives are proposed. Based on that, we recommend that the board concur that our executive officer send a letter of acceptance to the Antelope Valley Group stating that the requirement to prepare the salt nutrient management plan has been fulfilled. We also encourage the board to provide input on refining the model over time so that evaluating loading on the sub-basin level can happen, and to incorporate robust adaptive management strategies. And I think it's necessary. It should be a living document. It's not a static plan, but it's a living document that can be evolved over time. We also request that the board direct staff to contact the Antelope Valley Banking Project folks and request an anti-degradation analysis for that specific project so we can evaluate, is dilution happening or is loading happening? And then just to start a dialogue of reconsidering our general approach for aquifer recharge projects in general. I think that with these salt nutrient management plans, it gives us a great baseline to look at assimilative capacities in salt nutrient loading and evaluate on a case-by-case basis, you know, whether or not any potential degradation is in the best interest of the state, the people. So, questions? I was hoping that maybe the prior recommendations slide would actually spur discussion. let me go back.
Mr. Jardine, do you have any questions?
No questions. I have to applaud all the folks who put this report together, staff, you know, folks down here. I do agree it's a living document. It's a great first step in a long journey. Thank you. I agree with staff recommendations.
Mr. Pumphrey?
I think I do, but I think that I'm more interested, like Mr. Sandell, in hearing Ms. Cox and Mr. Dias's comments, because I suspect that I won't have any when they're through.
Mr. Dias.
Yes, thank you. Good presentation, Jim.
Thank you.
You have a slide, aquifer recharge, Antelope Valley Water Bank project. This project is already permitted and in operation. And they conducted CEQA. Their EIR was certified about 8 years ago. It seems like an overreach to ask them to do further analysis. Can you explain why you would like to do this for an existing project?
Well, I'm sorry, I haven't seen the CEQA document. But I think that the anti-degradation analysis is reasonable to say, yes, this project is not loading arsenic to the basin, that actual dilution is occurring. I think in order to answer the question, you need to have the data.
And if I may, Patrice Copeland, senior engineering geologist with the Victorville office, one of the reasons is the recycled policy itself basically says, it kind of gives everything, it outlines what should be done until such time as a salt nutrient management plan has been adopted. So then once the plan is in place, then you have to kind of go back and say, has 6816 been addressed? And that's the question that we're asking today with respect to this particular project, because now we have data. Now we know assimilative capacity is zero in the Nenok Basin. So then what do? We staff can't make a determination that it's in the best interest of the people of the state. Only my esteemed board can do that. And so that was why we were doing it, so that we can then make that determination based on data that they could give us, and we could answer your question about dilution or loading and make an informed, intelligent decision about how to proceed.
Patrice, did you intend to use the word recycled water?
No.
Oh, thank you. A few additional questions, Jan.
Sure.
Regarding your recommendation number 5, to reconsider the approach of not regulating regulatory aquifer recharge project, do we know what other regional boards are doing with regard to replenishment project?
No, I don't specifically know if any of the other regional boards are regulating those aquifer recharge projects.
Well, I've concluded that I concur with your first three recommendations very strongly, and I especially like the number 3, in which you encourage the group to refine their model, because I think it's premature to take any long-range actions by our board until that model is refined. Recommendation number 4, I don't know how we can ask the proponent to jump through further hoops for an existing project, and there are other projects similar to this one, and I think we're headed down the wrong road. Number 5, perhaps in the long term we can reconsider this general approach, but I think it's premature to make a decision tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandel?
Okay. Just a quick comment, which is that the Nenok sub-basin, if they've been in operation starting 8 years ago, there ought to be some data about what the water quality looks like when they were starting and what it looks like now. We may actually have what we need already.
Mr. I appreciate the characterization that this is an overreach for us. I absolutely agree with that. First of all, I'd like to say I think the study is very well done. Anytime you get collaborative stakeholders around the table, the end result is usually quite fine. I do feel that the monitoring well network needs to be expanded. That is where we will get the data that we are curious about as we move forward. So I think the stakeholders need to make a concerted effort over the lifespan of this document and as they look at future updates to aggressively expand that network. And I can almost guarantee you when a water master is appointed, that is going to be one of the main focuses for that entity because you cannot manage a basin without data. I think all of us up here are data junkies as well. As I review staff's recommendation, in the document itself, it's items 5 and 6. On the slide, it's items 4 and 5. I cannot support that at this time. I do think it is a reach for us without having very open stakeholder dialogue on this subject. When you look at the areas here in the southern Manhattan region that absolutely their lifeline is recharging groundwater, it is the water business is pervasively regulated as it is, and if we go in and throw in at this point in time yet another layer of regulation, I don't think it's a prudent use of our time as the groundwater is extracted and pumped out for service. It has to meet certain water quality. It's in the best interest of water districts to know and understand the water quality in their various basins. And as we look even on a sub-basin view, it is still quite a macro perspective because as we've all seen even out here in our Hinckley investigation, you can go a few hundred yards away and have a completely different water quality. So I think we have to be very careful to do such a broad brush. I think time will tell. Let's give it time. Let's look at having that dialogue in future years, but certainly not embedded in a recommendation that is to support such a very well done document. So I would like to see those two recommendations removed.
Do you know what other regional boards have done in terms of accepting salt nutrient management plans and what they've done about constituents increasing over time, whether they've been allowing that or not, and to what degree?
I haven't personally been involved with the state board stakeholder group, but this really is one of the very first to come for the regional boards. So we're still learning baby steps here.
Well, far be it from me to contradict what the Southern Manhattan board members have said. But I'm just wondering if there's something we could say, I mean, remove 4 and 5, but maybe recast them in a way to say, I'm just wondering if there's something that you would be comfortable with, such as what? I'm being interrupted.
No, you're not. I just wanted you to know that the comments that I was waiting for were not my comments, so please go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, my thinking in looking at this is not a package of recommendations that we have to accept or reject as a group. And so I think that the first three make sense to me. I don't know, I agree with Mr. Dias, I'm not sure at this point what you can require of a project that's been approved and permitted, but I wonder if there's not room for a conversation with that particular project about what it is that they're learning or not learning, or what's available for us to learn with them. So I think there's a way to rephrase number four to get perhaps to get at the information that we're looking for, and it really doesn't take board action necessarily to have someone just ask the project people, what's going on, what have you learned? I don't read number five the same way, I guess, that other people on the board are reading it, because I don't read number five as saying that if we ventured into this pool, that we have overturned any existing policy or made any new policy. I read number five as a question of is this a thing that's worth discussing in the future in some way or another? And I'm wondering, and I may be completely wrong about this, but I'm wondering if this is a conversation that we may end up having anyway, because as the groundwater regulation, not really regulation, but whatever it's being called, unfolds in the future. It seems to me that that we're going to sort of get here one way or the other. And if we are, it might be worth thinking about how we would want to look at that, or if we can. So I don't know that it requires board permission to ask this question, but I think if the question is asked, I sort of want to be kept appraised of what the information is that's being developed after it's being asked. I think it's a reasonable question to ask. It doesn't mean you have to do it, and sure, if you start down the path, I think we really ought to know ahead of time that it's a big commitment. It's a big step, as has been clearly pointed out, and we want to be really careful that we had clearly defined what we were doing, why we were doing it, and what we expected to happen as a result of that, and who we would do it with. But I don't see this as a request to bring a policy before the board. So if it was, I would be not happy with it and not inclined to say, yeah, let's go ahead and do that at this point. But I don't read it that way. Maybe I'm missing the point, and I'm misreading what's there. I'm not sure.
Mr. Dias and Ms. Cox, do you have a response about number five?
Go ahead.
I'll start with number five. The recommendation in the staff report on bait stamp 5-212 says direct the executive officer to require the proponent of the Antelope Valley banking project to perform a project-specific
anti-degradation.
That's number four there.
So in here, it's number five, which I think it's some of the confusion we're talking four and five. So that
five,
one, I
have 212.
Got you.
212.
Thank you.
And then item six in the staff recommendation, which is item five up there.
Let's just use the numbers that are on the projection.
The verbiage is okay. Five there, six here. Reconsider the general approach of not regulating aquifer recharge projects. I again think this is a policy discussion and does not, upon adoption of this suite of recommendations, then become a de facto charge to staff to do this. I think it's such a wide-reaching policy discussion that we must engage the stakeholders and have a listening session. And I also think perhaps let the state board set the direction, because they are the ones that are clearly out in front on the groundwater policy. So I would be reluctant to attempt to step out in front of the state board on that issue. Mr. Dines?
I appreciate Mr. Pumphrey's comments. We should look deeply into what the intent is. However, I think that this particular recommendation should be separated from the first three if we are going to approve those tonight. One unintended consequence of our board approving recommendation five could be counterproductive. In other words, it could discourage other proponents from investing in water banking facilities just for fear of the unknown. Thank you.
Okay, I have a question for, well, for everyone, actually. So how about if we altered number four to say, to simply be, have asked the staff to look into the matter more, look at the CEQA report, et cetera, and come back and give us a report about it sometime in the next year. Does that sound okay? Just to satisfy our curiosity about whether that's an issue or not?
Yes.
Go. Mr. Pumphrey.
Well, I'm sure that may be a good idea. I'm just not sure what four and five have to do with acceptance of the plan. The plan proponent and the people that we would direct four to are not the same people. And so the plan, accepting the plan and reading the plan may raise a question as posed in number four, but I think that's completely separate from the agenda item, which is receipt and potential acceptance of the plan. I think the questions that are posed in four and five on this slide are questions that deserve some thought. But as for me, in terms of what's on the agenda, I would be prepared to move that we accept the plan and that we ask that the executive officer send the letter of acceptance, that we commend the people who prepared the plan for the job that they did, and express our hope that in the future they will continue to develop the plan, that they'll let us help work with them where we can be helpful, and we'd like to continue to see the results of that work as it unfolds and determine how we best might use it as a tool, and then break off four and five and just think of those two things as separate questions that maybe we want to follow up on and get some more information about before we ask anybody to do anything.
I would second that motion.
Okay, I just am a little nervous about leaving four and five in a very vague way. I mean, I feel like we should have put, say, within a certain time frame or something. I mean, okay, thank you.
I have a suggestion for four and five. On four, perhaps staff can go back and review the CEQA documents. They can go back and talk to the proponent about the 8 years worth of data they have collected and see what's there. We can also check with Kim and others about the recycled water policy and what does it mean, how does it apply, and with all the information, come back to the board, perhaps an EO report on what we've learned. And we could do that in, Jan, I'm going to ask you, ballpark?
A couple of months, I think.
By late spring?
Oh, sure,
would
definitely.
Would that be okay?
Yay!
On five, I just want to also report, there's a lot of dialogue at the state level, not just about the groundwater management, but about stormwater recharge and what are the standards for that. There's a scientific panel for our new division of drinking water to look at toilet to tap, and when that gets recharged, what does that look like and the pathogen control of that. So there's a whole evolving world of different water sources for recharge, and there's such a demand for recharge, but everyone wants to be thoughtful about it. Perhaps, and I wish I could tell you exactly when that is, because it depends on what happens with the legislature and the budget next year, But I'm going to guesstimate by summer of next year, we'll have a sense in those three areas of where they're going that we could provide a report to the board on the whole issue of recharge and what does it mean as the ever-changing policy of the state changes. Would that be acceptable?
Okay, so let me see if I understand what the motion on the floor is. The motion on the floor is that we accept staff recommendations 1, 2, and 3, and that we ask the staff to come back with us on items 4 and 5 when more information is available. Does that sound like an appropriate summary, Mr. Pumphrey?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Did we have a second?
Yes.
Mr. Dias. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So let's take a 10-minute break. Oh, it's already almost 5 o'clock. Yes?
I suggest that we order to go, and then we take a break and then still do the bacteria item between 5 and 6. Have dinner brought in at 6?
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll take a 10-minute break, resume with the bacteria item, and have dinner brought in.
Oh, dinner at my desk. What a treat.
So I take everybody's credit card and show them.
We can do that.
So
I got cash.
I got cheese.
And I hate my cash
though. Oh, you're fine. Everybody else is going to owe you. You could do that.
Yeah.
You guys are all okay with that.
Well,
no, because everyone needs to.
I don't know.
So you guys want to eat here at 6. Yeah. You're not even going to have your break until 6. Okay, well, my son, he's driving by, so I told him I would meet him, so I just want to let him send him some time. So I'm 6.
I've got change. People don't have cash. Do you have cash?
I have cash. Okay. Cash. Should we calculate your 10?
I don't have.
Oh, no, you good for it? Do
I'm
I know where you live?
For it.
Okay.
I have no.
Don't you worry. So, but I need to figure out tip and tax on this one that you go, right? Don't I? So let's say these are $20. 20 and then 20. Don't want to put tax?
Well, it's
on $10? You wouldn't want to do 20 on.
Yeah. I would just say throw in your tip and that would take care of the.
Yeah. Okay. Just no, but yours and mine. Let's just say we're $20 for sake of argument. Tax 8%?
Where is their
which I've seen before. I just can't.
He doesn't do it.
There is a permit for public water.
Rebecca, you're safe for doing this. This
I don't see any phone number.
This is for Kim and I.
Okay.
Oh, it's a $50 bill. It's a $20 bill.
You got too much money?
Yeah, I know. I was trying to like make the bridge over there.
This was chlorinated. This was.
Who were we giving money to?
To Rebecca.
The food overlord.
Well, the water is from groundwater.
Oh my goodness. There's some more money in water.
I know.
I'm going to give the well so there's
showing back.
Do you think that covers enough for tax? I have no idea. I can give another. I can bring more.
We catch that.
They're doing tax
in.
Oh, okay. So 12 will probably be okay.
No, it's not. Yeah,
oh, not, yeah. Well, this is
so this is Kim and I, 22, which should be, you know, 50 cents to 75 cents over what they need. But
you're doing, Kim. Okay.
So for Kim and I, that's $22.
Okay.
That should cover tax.
Overage.
If you need it.
No, I have no idea how much I gave, but I gave it.
Okay.
I do know how much I gave. I gave 13. No, can't do it. There's a permit for it. So we've already found that fishing when it comes to 14.
Well, I didn't
read it.
Where it changed is
they left their phone number out of their menu.
7 6
7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7